Big show for you here today. Andy Behrens joins me to recap all the games from week 15. I also hit you with a Sunday night football recap off the top. The Seahawks are done if Geno Smith has to miss time. Meanwhile, the Packers and their passing game kind of rule the day when the run game has been the unit that we've typically relied on in recent weeks. Later on in the show, Andy and I tell you why the Detroit Lions might suddenly have a side of the ball that just is going to hold them back from being one of the best teams in the league. We finally saw the Eagles passing game play to their potential. The Colts give us one of the most baffling plays of the entire NFL season. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, December 16th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It's a hell of a day to talk ball. Week 15, Sunday, is in the books. A lot of big games, a lot of big performances, and maybe some letdown performances along the way to talk about here on the show today. Andy Behrens is going to join me to recap everything that happened in the 1 p.m. and 4:25 p.m. slates here on Sunday. But before we do that, as all of you loyal listeners know, we start with a solo Sunday Night Football recap. Packers 30, Seahawks 13. Man, a lot to talk about in this game. Let's start with the Packers side and what we care about in this game. What we care about on the Packers side of things is that we really saw Jordan Love throw the football down the field in this game. And I think that's important because, number one, this Packers team was dead last in neutral pass rate coming into this game. And you know, if you have a Packers receiver in fantasy, mostly Jaden Reed type teams out there, you've been aware of this. You've been aware that they have not been throwing the ball down the field. Even if you are a Jordan Love manager, you've been aware of the fact that the Packers have not really been throwing the ball with a ton of volume the last few weeks, really the last month or so. It's been extreme in terms of the lack of pass volume. So I kind of came into this game a little bit interested to see how was a team in Seattle going to respond, specifically how is Green Bay going to go against a team in the Seattle Seahawks that has played good defense over the course of the last few weeks. Since week 10, this has been one of the top 10 defenses in the NFL, as we talked about a few weeks ago with Nate on the Fantasy Film Room. And specifically against the run, they've been excellent of late. Since week 10, this team is number one in rushing success rate allowed prior to this particular game. And largely on Sunday night, you kind of saw that. They didn't allow too many explosive plays, just 3.9 yards per carry allowed to Josh Jacobs. Jacobs was good. It was an efficient run game. I'm sure the success rate is high. I haven't looked at those numbers yet, but overall, it wasn't exactly, you know, this extremely delightful rushing game for the Green Bay Packers. I think Seattle's run defense was largely what we should expect. What was not maybe to expectations was the fact that Jordan Love was able to take advantage of some of the clear-cut holes in this Seattle defense that even as they've kind of turned it around in the second half of the season, they got the linebacker room in order, they got the defensive line playing well, this outside cornerback group is not good. Devin Witherspoon's been great all year. He's mostly been their slot corner, a bit of a move-around guy for them. Bill Barnwell of ESPN tweeted out that touchdown to Romeo Doubs, the second one, which was a pretty fantastic catch, not much that we can really point to Witherspoon in terms of how could you allow that play, at least at the catch point part of it. That was the first touchdown that Witherspoon has allowed as the nearest defender all year long. So again, he's been a good player. The outside corners have not been good. And Jordan Love went to work as a vertical passer in this game. According to Next Gen Stats, 22.2% deep throw rate. That's the second highest rate of any game this season. 57.1% success rate. The fifth best game of his career from a success rate standpoint, top 10 in yards per completion among quarterbacks this week. He also threw the ball under 2.1 seconds in this game, which I know he had some layups behind the line of scrimmage, some screens and things there. But what I saw, at least to me, was a guy who knew where to push the ball, knew where to attack. Even some of the downfield passes came on quicker throws because it was just, hey, concept calls for you to play action fake, hit the top of your drop and get to your first read here. And the first read was often Christian Watson. It was often Romeo Doubs. Those guys both had pretty nice nights. Christian Watson didn't blow up in fantasy or anything, but did draw several critical pass interference plays. And that's what you want to do against the Seattle defensive backs. They're mistake prone on the outside. They're a little grabby out there. So take advantage of it and help move the ball down the field. That's what we're looking for here from Jordan Love in this passing game. Really felt like this was a good kind of coming together of a lot of things that make the Green Bay Packers offense pretty good and pretty interesting because they run the ball really well. Again, it wasn't a crazy rushing attack night, but you did get a 90-yard performance from Josh Jacobs. You got a touchdown from Josh Jacobs. Good stuff there. Again, the 3.6 yards per carry is a little low, but still, I think they kept the offense moving from a ground game perspective. They pass protected really well, and when Love is playing mistake-free football, when he's healthy, that's an important part of all this. I still think he's a really dynamic quarterback. I still think he's a guy that can play well enough to win in tough situations, to pick on defensive opponent weaknesses, and be a guy that could probably win a playoff team for this Packers, or win a playoff game for this Packers team. So really come away from this game pretty encouraged by the Packers offense, feeling pretty good about where they're at. As they head into a potential NFC postseason run, I believe they clinch a playoff spot if they win next week. Now, on the other side, we do not care about the Seahawks offense if Geno Smith is not under center. I don't like to come on the show and, you know, criticize commentators for things that they say, because it's a tough job. You try to talk for 3 hours and not say something stupid. I can barely make it through 15 minutes on the podcast without saying something stupid along the way. These guys aren't perfect. They make mistakes. By and large, these guys are all really good. So I try not to point too many fingers at when they say something silly, whatever. But when Chris Collinsworth, at one point when Sam Howell was getting taken down to the ground, said, "We have seen some good play out of the Seahawks offensive line, but not tonight." My freaking eyebrows shot to the ceiling here, because I'm like, what are we, Chris, what? I think this is one of the worst pass protection groups in the entire NFL. I mean, this offensive line has been bad all year long. I think what we've actually seen here is a quarterback that's covered up for a lot of the sins of the offensive line, and a coaching staff that has done a lot to try to adjust around a group that's really struggled to protect, especially on the interior all season long. Didn't help the fact that the Seahawks lost a center who's been playing pretty well for them after Connor Williams retired in this game. That was another issue. Geno was also struggling with some of the snap counts with that backup center too. Again, this has not been a good unit all year long, and I think Geno has done a lot of covering up there. And if you weren't aware of that before, I mean, damn, you're aware now. And I tweeted as soon as Sam Howell took the field that I thought he was going to be eating sacks like he was at the buffet after behind this offensive line. And one of the most prolific sack eaters from the 2023 NFL season had a 22% sack rate. He took 4 sacks on the night across 19 dropbacks, did Sam Howell. Sam Howell threw for 24 yards and lost 21 yards on sacks. That is outrageous stuff, people. Again, I know they weren't playing well when Geno Smith was on offense. This was already a night where they were really getting after in terms of the Packers defense. And it's not an elite unit over there. I think their blitz packages have gotten better over the course of the year. But still, like, you can't be having this type of performance against a defense like that. I'm not even really truly trying to rip into Sam Howell here, who, you know, if you listen to the podcast last year, Commanders fans hated my Sam Howell takes. I don't know what to say. Like, he's a backup quarterback who's got some really, really bad habits, and his bad habits make him just like a toxic mix behind this offensive line. So 5 of 14. Like I said, almost as many yards passing as he lost on sacks. Really big problem for Seattle if Howell has to start games, because I think Geno, who's not a perfect player, you know, he's too many turnovers in the red zone. he has his issues. I get it. I'm not even one of like the biggest Geno bros out there. You know, I'm not Greg Rosenthal or whatever. Okay. Shout out to Greg. I'm not even like my buddy Derek Klassen, who used to chart quarterbacks for us at Reception Perception, like one of the true hardcore Geno bros out there. I'm not even one of those people, but my God, he's been doing a lot to cover up for issues in this offense. And Sam Howell is particularly ill equipped and ill fitting player to play behind this offensive line. I think this pretty much completely removes DK Metcalf from any sort of discussion. He already, again, wasn't very productive the last few games. You're not pushing the ball down the field to DK Metcalf with Howell behind this offensive line. I even think the JSN stuff is really problematic, even though they can try to get the ball out quickly to him. Howell doesn't respond well to pressure. He is certainly not going to be decisive and get it out to JSN quickly on some of these routes that they designed to beat pressure, which is what Geno Smith was doing really well. I think this is a huge issue for JSN, who's been one of the best wide receiver picks you could have made all year. An obvious second year breakout candidate if you watched him play last year. I really liked him as a pick this year. Have him on a lot of teams. I'm concerned if those teams don't get eliminated this week. I'm concerned about what we're going to get from JSN and this entire passing offense down the stretch if Sam Howell has to start games. Mike McDonald said after the game that structurally things look okay in terms of Geno Smith's knee injury. Let's hope that's the case, because otherwise, man, I really do think this Seahawks offense is, they went from volatile to pretty much done as soon as Geno Smith left the equation. So not great there in terms of the Seattle Seahawks. They can still, if they win out, I believe they can still make the playoffs, but I don't think they're better than the Rams. I'm not even sure they're better than the Rams with Geno under center. I'm really not sure if this Week 18 matchup with them in Los Angeles is even going to matter if Sam Howell has to face the Vikings next week. Sam Howell versus the Vikings. I mean, give me a break. That is going to be a train wreck if that's what we have to watch. My God. Okay. Let's move on. We have a lot of performances to talk through with Andy Behrens. Let's get to the show. Joining me now, as he always does here on the Recap Show, it is my good friend, Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, that was a good NFL day. A really good NFL day. The late window was incredible. It was a bit of a bloodbath for my best fantasy team. So let's spend zero time talking about my own fantasy portfolio. Not that we would normally on the Recap Show. It's not a fantasy recap show exactly. But what a fun way to end the late window today.
Absolutely. And the biggest game here was the one that just went final right before we started recording this. Let's talk about that one first in the section of the games that we really care about here, which is Bills 48, Lions 42. Andy, this is the highest scoring game of the NFL season so far, beating out last week's Bills game, in which they lost to the Rams, of course. This one, Buffalo controlled here throughout. I mean, even the final score of 48-42 really doesn't totally do it justice. At one point, the Bills were up 35-14, you know, gaining a pretty quick advantage here at the end of the first quarter. They were up 14-0. So this was really, even though the Lions definitely gave it a fight, I'm not saying they got blown out here. This was a lot of players delivered in fantasy here, although we'll talk about some players that may be disappointed. Let's first focus on this Buffalo performance here. 362 passing yards from Josh Allen. The leading receiver was the third running back in Ty Johnson with 114 yards. Detroit's defense has definitely been banged up of late. It really showed up in this game where Josh Allen was able to do a lot of what he wanted through the air, and James Cook ripped off a ton of explosive runs on the ground.
Yeah, a lot of this was just brilliance from Josh Allen, right? They clearly made Ty Johnson a pretty significant part of the, insofar as anybody other than, like, you know, the whole thing is centered around Josh Allen, but insofar as anybody else is a centerpiece, Ty Johnson felt like that for a little while there. A lot of these targets were really early. They found him on, I think it was a fourth and second that they went for, and they found him like on a downfield shot, and that's, you know, versions of that are basically my favorite play in football. When it's fourth and one, fourth and two, and a coach or coordinator recognizes that you're allowed to gain more than 1 or 2 yards in those situations, and they take a shot because you're basically guaranteed, you know, man coverage or favorable situations for your best players. I loved it. This game was a blast. You are right to mention that there are some notable absences from the box score in a game that delivered over 1,000 total yards, 90 total points, over 1,000 total yards. We got a goose egg from Amari Cooper coming off a heavy usage game. That was not expected, but Cook was great. Allen was great. Shakir is always great. This is a fun one.
Not even just a goose egg in like your fantasy lineup. Amari Cooper does not show up on the box score. He did not get targeted in this game, Andy. When Dalton and I talked about Amari Cooper on the Trust Meter podcast last week, you know, we noted the stat from Jacob Gibbs where Amari Cooper saw 14 targets and more air yards than any player in any game this season. I did not think it was going to, you know, ping pong back to this where he's going to be completely not targeted in the game. However, it was worth noting, and I pointed this out on the pod in that segment, that he still didn't run a full complement of routes. He was below 60% of the routes last week. Despite the fact that he was so heavily utilized, like when he was in the game, he was obviously a priority to get the ball to. In this game here, Andy, Keon Coleman comes back. He runs more routes. Obviously, Khalil Shakir, both tight ends run more routes than Amari Cooper. Mac Hollins runs more routes than Amari Cooper in this game. And like nobody can come in here and complain about it and be like, well, you know, you got to get Amari Cooper. They scored 48 points and they won the game.
Right. Yeah, there's absolutely no complaint that can be issued. This is just one of those receiving cores that we don't talk about them in exactly the same way that we talk about the Packers, but we probably should, right? Nobody in this game sees more than 7 targets. No receiver, I mean, Shakir found the end zone, but no receiver really distinguishes themselves in any particular way. And still somehow Josh Allen ends up well over 300 yards, monster fantasy performance from him. And I mean, normally in fantasy, if a receiver in any given week, any player has a 12 target game, let alone a 14 target game like Cooper just gave us with, as you mentioned, I think over 250 air yards in that game, like a crazy total. I mean, that's just, even if they don't do anything with it, that's an automatic add, right? Like that kind of volume, that kind of target share is just, we got to pick them up, and we got to pick them up aggressively. To go from that to nothing is really remarkable, but it's also a testament to how deep and how, you know, like we, I don't know, what are the Bills going to do without Steph Diggs? What are they going to, you know, they've lost pretty significant losses coming into this season. I mean, this is a pretty talented receiving core. They have some fun pieces. They don't have any one guy who's just a complete do it all, do everything receiver. And, it hasn't burned them yet.
No, not at all. And they've been able to shift their styles around a lot, you know, kind of both depending on who's available, but also how they want to attack the opposing defense. And we talked a little bit about this in the preview show, that this seemed like a game where they'd want to come in and heavy, like hit with the run game. And that didn't necessarily happen, right? Like, you know, Josh Allen throws for over 360 yards. It's not exactly like, oh, this was a real ground and pound type game, but they certainly exploited some of those absences. Even Aleem McNeil, who played in this game, he was eventually ruled out with an injury. Detroit is just epically banged up on defense. I mean, even Quan Alexander, they like just signed off the street and is now starting. He was in coverage on one of those like big Ty Johnson receptions early in the game. And you do wonder, as now the NFC's number one seed is up for grabs in the next few weeks because Detroit loses this game, you do kind of wonder if this defense is going to be something that comes back and bites them when they play one of these big boy quarterbacks at some point in the playoffs. But yeah, it's obviously Khalil Shakir gets home because he gets kind of a pop pass in this one around the end zone. Ray Davis scores a short receiving touchdown. James Cook, no fear. He still does, like I said, rips off a bunch of explosive plays here, and he scores twice. Josh Allen also scores twice on the ground. Like it hasn't leading up to the last few weeks, it hasn't been like the most dominant Josh Allen fantasy season. If you made the playoffs with Josh Allen as your QB1, you got a pretty good shot at taking home the title here.
Yeah, you clearly do. I said I wasn't going to talk about my own fantasy portfolio. I won't do it. I won't mention my Josh Allen team. Let's just forget it. Okay. Just absolutely remarkable stat lines here from the key players, with the exception of it feels wrong to focus on, you know, one receiver who didn't have a day when the overall offense is giving us over 500 total yards, 48 points, just absolutely insane. I would be happy to see this as a rematch in the Super Bowl later on, since my own real life team is not going to be involved in those proceedings. Just a fantastic game. But you're also like, you're right about the Lions. I mean, they played a tight game with the Bears. They played a losable game against the Bears. They played tight games with the Packers and Vikings. Like, the NFC is in fact up for grabs.
Yeah, let's talk about those Lions on offense, because you look at the box score here, it's like 494 yards for Jared Goff, 5 touchdowns. A bunch of guys end up delivering, right? Jahmyr Gibbs scores twice. Man, I was sweating that Jahmyr Gibbs. I will talk about one of my fantasy teams where I was sweating Jahmyr Gibbs here after Ryan Heath's team might beat me if I don't get some big performances from some receivers. Fantasy points is Ryan Heath's going to beat me in a league that Edwin Porras puts on, because he had Jameis Winston as one of his starting quarterbacks in Superflex and still might beat me because Devontae Adams dropped like nearly 40 points or something on me. So it's a tough look for your boy if I don't win this particular matchup. So I was definitely sweating the Jahmyr Gibbs stuff in this game. He scores twice. Jameson Williams gets the final touchdown of the game. Pretty sweet route by Jameson Williams on that play. Your guy Sam Laporta goes over 100 yards. Amon Ross St. Brown just can't stop catching footballs in this game. Yeah. So this, again, it's just the Lions offense. It had, like I said, some stop and start moments. Their run game was definitely kept in check in this one. Obviously, if you started David Montgomery in fantasy, you are feeling not very good. That's kind of the one loser here. But overall, this is still an offense that can hang with anybody. I do just wonder if that defense is going to be something that holds them back in the postseason specifically.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. There are just so many losses on defense, and I think we've now seen, and Buffalo, okay, fine. Consider Buffalo an exception. They wouldn't have to see Buffalo, obviously, until February. But still, this is a defense that has suffered so many losses that you go up against the Packers, you go up against the Vikings, the way they're playing. Certainly you go up against Philadelphia. Philadelphia is healthy. You're going to give up a number to them too. Now, the Lions just scored 42, right? Like they can hang with any offense. And they still might be the most dangerous offense in football, despite this result. They have incredible playmakers. The thing that absolutely delighted me about you mentioned Amon-Ra's touchdown, 66 yards, I think it was, came on like a third and long, and Tony Romo had just said, you don't have to get it all at once. And then they got it all at once. I loved it. I absolutely love the sequence of events and announcer commentary is perfect. Wouldn't change a thing. This is just such a fun team. And, you know, this game always had the potential, obviously, to go this way, where you get a game total like this. I don't know what it was at kickoff, 54 and a half, something like that, close to 55 points. Obviously, it had the potential to go over that. It did. Nearly doubled it. There was always a path for Jared Goff to just end up with like this fantasy line or close to it, right, in an absolute shootout. But the other eventuality that we saw that didn't happen, of course, was Detroit just taking command on the ground and running away with it. But Buffalo just obviously didn't let that happen.
Yeah, Bills are a super impressive operation right now. I mean, it just last point on the Bills. This is at home, all right? This is a home game for the Lions. And yeah. I can't remember the last time a team has come in and pushed around Detroit, and that's kind of what happened in the first half of this game, at least.
It was maybe a little glimpse of what it would look like, not that they ever will, if Buffalo ever built Josh Allen a dome.
That's I'm not touching that. I'm not touching that with that talking point. Okay, Andy, you want to go on that turf? You want to be a dome, bro? I'll leave that one to you. But yeah, last point on the Lions here. At Chicago, at San Francisco, and then versus Minnesota rest of the way. So I don't necessarily know that this version of the Bears or this version of the Niners, and we'll see what's at stake in that Week 18 game. I don't know if we're going to get another big offensive test for this team before the playoffs, but certainly got to feel a little difficult about what's going on defense if you are the Detroit Lions right now. Let's move on to the next game here. None of these other games are going to like super, super competitive in the late window, but they all were very fascinating. Eagles 27, Steelers 13 is our next game here. A little bit of a mixed bag if you are AJ Brown, who we talked about.
Yeah.
is so, like, he was obviously upset with what was going on. We discussed it on the preview show. Everybody talked about it this week. I think, Andy, you and I had, I'm going to say we had the smartest conversation about it, because we didn't act like, you know, complete freaks because of what he said or whatever. He comes out and he's heavily targeted in this game. Both him and Devontae Smith are actually heavily targeted. The passing game for Philadelphia looks better than it has in a while, but the mixed bag here comes from the fact that A.J. Brown got tackled on a little bit of a hip drop tackle there late in the game. He might miss week 16 because of that, but for his fantasy managers, he at least delivered a big performance, as did Devontae Smith in this game.
Yeah, I think, at least in reality, the key fact from this game, it ends on a drive that lasted 21 plays and over 10 minutes. Like, when Philadelphia had to just end this game, they ended the game so just emphatically and with a slow grinding drive that ate up the entire fourth quarter, which is super impressive. And if that's, you know, we know that the Lions can do that to people, and clearly Philadelphia can do that to people too. Like, that is, you know, that is some January playoff football stuff. And that was just tremendously impressive. Brown is going to be the ongoing storyline this week. It looked bad. It was, you know, the tackle itself, like the, you know, lower legs pinned underneath him as he went down. Not exactly sure what the nature of the injury is going to be, if it's an ankle, if it's a knee. Didn't look good. But I will say, like, I don't know, he was running through the tunnel after the game. Like, it's clearly not a, whatever it is, it's not the worst case version of that thing. So I, you know, you can still be a little bit optimistic that he might be able to play next week. I don't want to rule him out or anything like that, but it's a huge concern.
Yeah. And that's going to be the big talking point. It's just, is he going to be available for next week? Cause this is what was, I think, why AJ Brown was right to say, like, what they got to get better at is passing. Why it's so frustrating to be this team, because, man, when they want to throw the ball, they're really good at it. Like, I mean, yeah, or at least when everything is working, they can be a very good passing team. I do think there's some limitation to Hurts's game. I did think that the Steelers were a particularly bad matchup for forcing Jalen Hurts and this passing offense into what they don't do well, because they're so man coverage heavy and they're so single high heavy. According to Next Gen Stats, Jalen Hurts was 11 of 13 for 138 yards in both of his touchdowns against man coverage. He was also pretty good in designed runs in this game. Again, some of the scrambles against man coverage. That's great. So, I think that when they see some of these man coverage heavy teams, I still think this can be an effective passing game. It's just against some of these more complex defensive looks and some of the more, you know, funky zone coverage looks that they're going to get from some of these teams in the NFC. That will definitely put this team into a bind. But what they showed you today is that they can still be a dangerous and effective passing offense when they get the right defensive matchup. The rest of the teams are going to play are Washington, Dallas, and New York. There's still some pretty man coverage heavy influences for these three teams down the stretch as well.
Huge game for Devontae Smith. He looked great, and it's been, you know, it's been a while until very recently that we've seen these kind of games from Smith. So that was really good to see. I thought, you know, I know people get annoyed by the ongoing presence of Kenny Gainwell. I thought he had some really nifty moments in this game. Not that not that he's a guy that you add in fantasy, but I thought he had a couple plays that showed why he actually sees the field alongside Saquon Barkley.
You mentioned Saquon Barkley. We haven't talked about him because he didn't really do much in this game. Buckle up, folks. That's going to be a recurring theme for some of the best running backs that you could have drafted in fantasy. Really big letdown spot by a lot of these guys today, which, you know, we'll see if that actually ends up influencing the final championship roster data, right, Andy? Because my thought is usually that if Saquon Barkley is the reason that you lose in week 15, or Derrick Henry is the reason you lose in week 15, the first round of the fantasy playoffs, well, your team was probably on fraud watch to begin with. Okay. Because if you're good because of one player, like, yeah, you don't actually really get any like credit for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, congratulations, you drafted Saquon Barkley at a little bit of a discount. Good job. That was one move that you needed to make. That was one. You got to make a lot of others. And if you didn't make them, well, congratulations, your team's, you're going to get bounced the first round of the playoffs.
They also had disappointing fantasy weeks, but completely survivable disappointing fantasy weeks, right? Like, Saquon still finishes with over 80 scrimmage yards in this game. It wasn't wasn't that, or close to 80 scrimmage yards. It wasn't, you know, like, that's not great. He didn't score a touchdown. You didn't get the splash play that you're accustomed to getting. but you can survive like 8 points from your running back. And same deal with Derrick Henry, right? It was it 67 yards on the ground. Like you can survive that, assuming you drafted well. It was never going to be as simple as this one guy leads me to the title.
Yeah, even Joe Mixon, who averaged sub 2 yards per carry, he scammed his way to 8 points in this game because of 5 catches. So, yeah, we'll get to all of those guys as we go through it. But that was the case for the Eagles RB1. On the Steelers side of things, kind of a little bit of a predictable outing from the passing game. Like, nothing really shocks you there. They spread the ball out a ton. We figured that was going to happen. But the run game really did not show up in this one, which, yeah. Hey, it's just another credit to the Eagles defense, which I still think is the best unit in the league.
Yeah, this is a really good defense. And I don't want to, you know, I don't think anybody should make any sweeping statements about the Steelers in a game in which they didn't have their most dangerous playmaker facing, you know, the most daunting defensive challenge in the league, because the Eagles are really good against both the run and pass, and they stopped them both today. You know, the Steelers score on the passing touchdown. Pat Freiermuth basically had to rip it away from a couple guys, right? That could have very easily not been a score. That was a nice play by him. Just not a lot else there. And it's, I don't know, it's not even any great fault of the Steelers. They had a shot, I guess. I can't tell you how impressed I am at the fact that Philadelphia managed to chew up an entire quarter against them to grind out this game.
And the Steelers probably had 2 possessions in the second half total. That's brutal.
That's just crazy. Because that is what the Steelers want to do to you, right? Like that's their whole mentality, their whole mindset. So that's just one of the most impressive things. And if I were a Steelers fan, I think that's what would really trouble me, the fact that I just could not get Philadelphia off the field for an entire quarter.
Yeah, not ideal there. TJ Watt, talk about another superstar who left this game with an injury. That's one to monitor as well. Not sure on the seriousness of it, but certainly something to monitor, because if they don't have him, I do think this defense kind of relies on players being great, as opposed to, like I said, they're very man coverage heavy, they're very single high heavy. So if they don't have him, he's one of the best defensive players in the league. That's obviously would be a pretty big deal. Let's talk through the final game that we really care about. I would not say that this game was all that fun to watch. Texans 20, Dolphins 12. But the reason I put it in this section, Andy, is because it was actually close and competitive. And it was one of the few games in the early window that was close and competitive and really mattered on both sides of it. This pretty much effectively... The Dolphins season was already over, in my opinion. It's really, really over now. You know, they dropped to 6-8, which... still somehow second in the AFC East, but that's because that division is pathetic. But who cares? Their season is over. And the Texans win the AFC South because of this game and another game that we will talk about in the next section. But Andy, do you come out of this game, you know, Texans 20 points against a defense that has been good on the season, but kind of got walked around by the Jets offense last week?
Yeah.
And like I said, Joe Mixon averages 1.9 yards per carry in this game. Do you come out of this game feeling like, okay, Texans, they win their division, that's great, they can make a little run in the playoffs?
No part of me thinks the Texans can make a run in the playoffs. And you know, like they're 9-5. We should feel really good about the Texans, right? They're an early division champ. I like CJ Stroud. I like Nico Collins. I thought Tank Dell had a couple of moments today where he looked Tank Dell-ish. And obviously Joe Mixon has been great all year. So maybe you can just say, okay, well, this is one hiccup, and this is the Dolphins, like, you know, focusing on something that was a clear vulnerability last week. Like, man, this is kind of a jarring win in some respects, right? Like there's no yardage here. There was barely any yardage in this game. This game had less than half the total yardage of the first one we talked about, Bills and Lions. Mixon, just a huge disappointment. He makes some of it back by catching 5 pounds. Like, he's the leading receiver for the Texans with 5 catches for 33 yards. Nico Collins had the 2 touchdowns. He's great. This is a good day, by the way, for like a lot of your pet receivers. Nico Collins with a couple of touchdowns, but that's where all the yards were. It was 4 catches for 17 yards. They did what they needed to do. Obviously nothing flashy about it, but I'd be concerned knowing that, you know, the team that that looks like they currently, I mean, the Chiefs rule the AFC and all of the NFL until they don't. But the Bills are seem like the most complex problem to solve right now. And they just put 48 up on the board against maybe the best team in the NFC. So that's, I don't know. There's a gap right now between Houston and Buffalo. And that game, if it happens in the postseason, is going to be ugly.
What would have to go right for the Texans to score 48 points? I don't know.
That's a series of like defensive touchdowns. There's a special team score in there. Yeah.
They're maybe playing a collegiate defense. I'm not too sure because everything, producer Colin said it very well in the chat. Shout out to Colin. Producer Colin said this very well in the chat that everything looks hard for the Houston offense. Yeah. Andy, Joe Mixon is averaging, you know, like 18 something fantasy points per game in Yahoo standard scoring, which would put him between the Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry. You put him in that tier. That is such like fake news in terms of describing the Houston run game. Would you like to guess where Houston ranks in rushing success rate in the game specifically, the 11 games that Joe Mixon has played this season? Just give me a guess. By the way, because I mentioned those two backs, both the Ravens and the Eagles rank inside the top 7 in rushing success rate this year.
Yeah, are they just a middle of the pack team in terms of success rate? Are they like 15, 16?
Oh, you freaking wish. They're 31st.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Wow.
They're 31st. And that's because this is not like the first game that Joe Mixon has given you some. And like, by the way, I'm actually not picking on Joe Mixon here because I think by and large, the acquisition of Mixon has been like pretty good one. You know, I think they kind of got like the eyebrow raise at the contract they gave him because he was basically going to get cut by the Bengals before they gave a 7th round pick. So I'm not even saying this is really a Mixon issue. This is the second game in the last, we'll call it just over a month here, where he's gone under 2 yards per carry with a long run of under 9 yards in those games. So that those three games are probably doing a lot of heavy, like pushing down them to 31st. Yeah. But still, I think this is more of just a system issue. Like I think their run scheme is bland to be nice. It's very typical outside zone Shanahan nonsense. They're not even that good at that. And the offensive line, I mean, beyond the fact that like in the run game, they're maybe passable, but they're horrific in the pass game. They give a bunch of unblocked pressures. Chop Robinson was all over CJ Stroud in this game. He's played really well over the back half of the year, so that's not a big issue. But at the same time, this is a pretty well-regarded offensive line coming into the year. CJ Stroud takes 4 sacks. He's constantly under pressure. I'm with you. I don't see this offense as threatening at all, particularly, again, with just how poor they've been as a run team.
Yeah, and then you look ahead at what they're going to have to face in the AFC if they're going to get through it, if they're going to, you know, if they're going to be playing in the final weekend for the AFC. It just this is a very hard road for that particular team.
Dolphins side of things here. Probably definitely Tua's worst game of the year. Maybe one of the worst games I've ever seen him play. Put the ball in harm's way a lot. Just was straight up missing throws against a team. You know, don't get me wrong, the Texas defense can put you in a bind. But still, this is the guy that was averaging, it was just under 74% completion rate in this game. And I mean, when he tried to push the ball down the field, it was really a mess. 3 of 10. For 43 yards and all 3 of his picks on throws of 10 plus yards downfield, according to Next Gen.
Also, a scary injury in this game to Grant DuBose that was at least in part, you know, a really regrettable throw. Right, very tough watch for Tua. Tyreek Hill had nothing going on until very late in this thing and finished with an incredibly quiet line. Jonnu Smith found the end zone again. Phenomenal season for him. He was great after the catch a couple times too. He was really fun. Devon Achane was fine. You know, 7 catches in this one. He's had a really, really good like full PPR season. I would love, and I know that the Dolphins just want everybody to have like 100 meter sprint speed, right? Like they obviously like track stars and it's got a lot of appeal. I would love for this team to just simply have a hammer to compliment Devon Achane, right?
Yeah, like, so true.
man, they really need that. They need somebody who can run like between the tackles with authority and complement all of these other really, really just electric, not all of them gadgety players, but you know what I'm saying. Not everybody can be really small and have 4.2 speed. It would be great if they had somebody to complement that who really stressed the interior of a defensive line.
Yeah, even Jalen Wright, the back they did draft this year, is kind of like Devon Achane if he ate a Mario mushroom. So it was a little bit like it's not exactly what they needed or the skill set that you're saying that they needed here. Raheem Mostert is barely heard from this game. 6 carries for 8 yards as well. Just this run game has been bad for a long time this year. It has been bad. And in the passing game, just I really don't know what to say other than just Tua has an off game here. Jalen Waddle, no catches in this game. He also suffered an injury. Really the only, Jonnu Smith gets his touchdown, as you mentioned. I will say for the Dynasty Sickos, Malik Washington is something for this team. He gives them another answer in kind of that short passing game. 5 catches for 52 yards. Odell Beckham was released over the weekend. Not that he was like a big impact player, but that should only free up more snaps for Washington, who ran a route on 72% of the dropbacks in this game.
The Waddle situation, he was one of, we had several injuries this week where the guy who was injured stood on the sideline and watched the game and looked, you know, not like, it was the same deal with Patrick Mahomes, who obviously suffered an injury, but he looked fine as a bystander. Doesn't of course mean he's fine. They're allowed to be on the sideline watching the rest of the game, but like, you know, it's not like they were receiving treatment all game or anything like that. Not like they had to go to the locker room. So I guess you can be sort of cautiously hopeful about Waddle if you got through with him. Hopefully he's okay. Like it's not, you know, it's almost certainly over for the Miami Dolphins. But 8 losses isn't like it's officially over. Feels over. But they are still in it. Although I do wonder what happens when this team is like really eliminated, because we know that Tyreek is playing through stuff. Obviously, Waddle is playing through stuff. There are a lot of shutdown candidates here.
That's a very, very good point. Just to update sort of like this was a classic Dolphins loss. You know, it's in December. Can't blame the weather, but it's late in the season. It also comes against a team that is above 500. The Athletic noted that Mike McDaniel now has a 3-13 lifetime record against teams above 500. Not ideal. Not ideal for the Miami Dolphins or their head coach. Let's take a break. We come back. We'll talk through some other games that we sort of care about in week 15 right after this. All right, we're back. Let's talk through the games that we sort of care about, Andy, starting with Broncos 31, Colts 13. Big picture stuff, according to PFF now after this loss, the Colts have a 15% chance to make the playoffs. I'll go ahead and, in the Matt Harmon model, they have a 0% chance to make the playoffs. The Broncos, meanwhile, have a 94% chance to make the playoffs. Big note on the Broncos, short week for them. They'll play on Thursday night. Pat Surtain picked up an injury late in this game, it looked like. That's obviously late, very, very late in this game, which is unfortunate. You can't bench all the starters as soon as the game's over, all right? So that's the biggest story to watch for them, but they look like they're cruising towards a playoff berth, one that I think they have earned. Let's stick on the Colts here for a second, Andy. What is more embarrassing to you? Jonathan Taylor's fumble at the just inexplicable, one of the most ridiculous fumble before you cross the end zone, you know, plays I've seen, especially from a dude who's like not, you know, it's played in the league for a minute now, after a 40-yard run, which might have turned the tide of the game because of just where this was, at least changed the current complexion of it. What's more embarrassing, that or I don't even know how to set the toss to you, but we'll just call the AD Mitchell pick six trick play which might have been the most disgusting play of the entire season.
Absolutely most disgusting play. I think that's a good call out. It's just bewildering. And I get the desire to run some kind of trick play and some kind of misdirection there because nothing else was working for you. I still having watched it and rewatched it, I'm not sure what they were trying to achieve on the play. Like we had a big text exchange about it, and I don't know that they had anything going on downfield whatsoever. It was like you know, buried on the depth chart tight end Will Mallory streaking downfield. And it looks like maybe he gets picked up by a safety. So I don't know that anything is available deep downfield to them. Are they trying to set up like a weird little screen to their own quarterback? I have absolutely no idea what they were trying to achieve. It didn't look like they were going to get a chunk of yardage out of it, even if it went right. And of course, it went hilariously wrong. Just like, I don't know, the Colts seem to do this as a, it's like in their franchise DNA to maybe every 10 years or so, give us one of the most bewildering plays that I don't know where this works. This might work in high school against the right opponent. This might work in like the Sun Belt Conference. This is not, I don't know. That is not going to work against an NFL defense. I mean, he threw the pass back to like Anthony Richardson, basically stayed in the pocket. Like he barely moved. I don't know why this play was going to work. I don't know why anybody thought it was going to work.
Okay, here's the thing though. It's the most disgusting play I've ever, like, of the season, like I said. And we, if you're watching this on YouTube, I think we're actually going to have the animated dots up here, cuz Bill Barnwell tweeted this out and I quote tweeted it as well. So it's on my timeline if people want to check this out, cuz we're not going to be able to show the part that, like, we're not going to be able to animate it correctly what I think is the worst part of this play, which is Anthony Richardson throws the ball to A.D. Mitchell, and based on the dots here, it looks like Will Mallory is open, because I think that's what this is. I think it is a one route play to Will Mallory, who has four catches on the season coming into this game. Just want to put that out there. So we can go ahead and question the wisdom of that anyways, when you have a lot of other interesting players to maybe throw the football to. But again, based on the dots, because Nick Benito, the linebacker, crashes on this play, and Shane Steichen's only explanation was this was credit to Nick Benito. He made a hell of a play. He did make a hell of a play. Unbelievable play by him, no question. But because he crashes on this thing, and I think he just sniffed it out, there is an opening in the middle of the field. And I think Mallory at one point maybe would be a decent option. The problem is A.D. Mitchell takes forever. I want the time to throw on A.D. Mitchell, okay? I don't know if that's out there, you know, on any of the charting services, Next Gen, True Media.
He got the laces right on the football. Like, he took his time.
Bro, and I like, in real time, I thought he was taking forever. And then the angle from Billy Marshall, great account on Twitter. Again, check my timeline, because I tweeted this out. He perfectly shows the angle of it. A.D. Mitchell catches it, takes like two steps backwards, maybe trying to collect himself, and then flips the freaking ball like in his hands before throwing it back to Anthony Richardson. Number one, obviously he gets it, Nick Benito just comes right in there, intercepts it, and takes it to the house, pick six. The season is on the line, by the way, and this is what we are doing here. And I get it. The Colts passing game once again looks like something out of 1965 from a results perspective. So I understand maybe they felt the need to get in the bag here and try something different. But even if Benito doesn't blow this play up and take it back to the house, by the time Mitchell throws it back to Richardson, that throw to Mallory is probably contested. And then we're throwing, because it's the one route on the play, we're throwing a contested ball to our tight end with four catches on the season. So it's just, we could go on and on, but it is truly horrendous.
Well, a couple of other things there. I think the Mallory throw might be open to Mitchell. I don't think it has any chance of being open to Richardson on the pitchback. And also, because Mitchell drifted back so far, I'm not actually sure that Anthony Richardson can throw that ball when it comes back to him, right?
Yeah, like,
I don't think that was going backward to Richardson. I don't know. I'd have to see it. I don't want to see it again. I've already seen it like 20 times, but I'm not sure that was going backward to Richardson. He might not be able to throw that thing, which is why I thought perhaps they're just designing the worst screen of all time to get the ball back to their quarterback, which, I don't know, you could have just run him off tackle. You didn't need to go to all that trouble.
Yeah, right. If you wanted to set him up in space, there's a lot of ways to do that besides throwing the ball to the farthest outside receiver, I think, on the play, which is A.D. Mitchell. By the way, it's a shitty throw from Mitchell, too, because it hangs up. Even once he finally got the damn thing out of his hands, it took forever for it to get back there. Like, it's just, I want to see how much time And I think I can, actually look at this from the Barnwell tweet, like how much time elapsed from when Richardson first drew it to when he got it back.
Yeah.
So, Andy, you can give me any final reactions. I think I can actually look this up.
Well, you also mentioned the Jonathan Taylor play, which just absolutely baffling that you know, because we've already seen this occur in the current season, right? Like this has been a thing that has happened and has already embarrassed people this year. So at that moment, you would like to think that, you know, across the league, coach, like in every running back room, in every team meeting, at some point, was it Malachi Quarley that did it first? Who was first responsible for that for that play this year? That was a bad
Quarley.
One.
Tough.
Yeah,
Quarley. By the way, has been a healthy scratch for like some practice squad receiver. So great pick by the Jets there.
Yeah, you would think that would have done it, and everybody would have, you know, been it would have been sort of reaffirmed to every running back throughout the league, every receiver, every skill player, anybody who might touch a football. We just go ahead and run through the end zone with the ball. We don't need to cut it close with dropping the foot. Like it's just an amazing mistake to make at this point in this particular season. Veteran player, he wasn't even really celebrating is the other thing. He just kind of dropped it at the line at the goal line. Just an amazing and baffling mistake that of course changed the game.
Yeah, Battle, one of the Bengals defensive backs, actually did it in a game this week at the 1 yard line. Yeah. He was trying to change hands and just dropped it at the 1 yard line when he was taken back.
That one at least wasn't celebratory exactly. Yeah. He might have been thinking of the celebration that he was going to engage in, but I think he was just changing hands with the football, not that he needed to.
Anyways, the Broncos, they win this game. Their defense, obviously, it was always going to be a tough matchup. Colts passing game against the Broncos pass defense, but they failed even more epically than they should have failed because of that trick play. On the Broncos side of it, it wasn't exactly a clean outing from their passing game perspective. Their run game, of course, is non-existent in this game. The Colts kind of seemed like they sold out to stop that run game, which is interesting. And, you know, Bo Nix was a little bit messy in this game, that is for sure.
Yeah, that's the thing about it is Bo Nix kind of sort of tried to give you this game, right? He throws three interceptions, a couple of really ugly balls in this one. It was much more reminiscent of September Bo Nix than anything that we've seen from him lately. So I don't know, a competent opponent would have taken this game, I think, from Denver. And, you know, credit to them, they hung in. Cortland Sutton eventually got home in a game that was quiet for him for a really long time. The early touchdown passes from Nix were to some truly weird receivers. So not a lot of – Denver always has these games where, you know, it's a pretty good – end of game stat line for Bo Nix, and there's almost no one you can add and no one you can talk yourself into, even if the box score looks like it's full of stats.
Yeah, bit of a bizarre game from the Broncos offense, but like I said, short week for them. We'll see what happens as they go against the Chargers, who is our next team that we're going to talk about here. Buccaneers 40, Chargers 17. This is a big win by Tampa, and just a great example of when they get out of their own way, they can be one of the most electric offenses in the NFL. Mike Evans, monster game here. Baker Mayfield, 4 touchdowns. Those guys were finding each other down the field consistently against a defense that has limited some explosive passing plays. And meanwhile, their run game was excellent. Bucky Irving just ripping off big plays left and right. Rashad White, even though he lost a fumble, was a consistently impactful player in this game. So, yeah, just great. A big statement win from the Bucs offense against a non-like pushover opponent.
Yeah, this is a really good rushing committee, right? Like, I'm a huge fan of Bucky Irving. I've found him to be just an absolute revelation this season. But I'm also not banging the table saying that he needs to get 30 touches a game. Rashad White's been pretty good. Obviously Bucky Irving is playing through some stuff, and the fact that he handled 15 carries here and still looked like, you know, mid-season Bucky Irving was really impressive. Thought he was great. Baker was wonderful. Baker also had some great moments as a scrambler in this one. Again, he's been doing that all year. Like really important first downs, really important pickups. He was great. We had another, I mean, man, this was true of both Mike Evans and Jalen McMillan again, with another, like, he's the only guy in the camera frame kind of touchdown. Impressive performance by him, 5 catches, 75 yards. Again, the the really easy walk-in touchdown. So obviously some good play design going on here on the Tampa side. And it was always a possibility that the Chargers could lose this game. I did not see it as a serious possibility that they would lose it 40-17. That's a big number against a defense that we've had a fair amount of respect for most of the year. The Chargers get absolutely nothing whatsoever on the ground. Not a surprise that they didn't get much from Gus, didn't get much from Kamani Vidal. Relatively quiet day for Justin Herbert against a defense that had been, you know, Tampa entered the week allowing the most fantasy points to quarterbacks. They've been super vulnerable. It's the only defense that Kirk Cousins has been able to beat this year. Like, I don't know, an offense that expects to make a postseason run of any sort should have at least put up a number against Tampa.
Yeah, pretty concerning. And obviously Justin Herbert's dealing with injuries right now, and we know they don't really have like a second pitch in the passing game behind Ladd McConkey, who's also dealing with injuries right now. Even though Quentin Johnson showed up for a touchdown in this game, still it's 5 catches on 10 targets. Your boy Stone Smart was like the second most productive receiver in this game behind Ladd McConkey. Shout out to Stone Smart. That's great. It's not really what you want if you're an NFL passing game. So that's the state of the Chargers right now. And yeah, their run game, this is another one that there's been some good play from J.K. Dobbins from like a fantasy perspective, but this has not been a productive run game basically all season. 3 things I will say about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Number one, I had a super flex decision between Baker Mayfield and Justin Herbert specifically in this game. Holy did I get that one wrong? You can guess what I did. Number two, you could have given me a lot of guesses preseason about which backfield we would get like 2 fantasy starters in the fantasy playoffs from.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Would not have given you the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but I do believe that is where we're at. Third point, you mentioned Jalen McMillan. And I got to really obviously watch like the film. I have not been charting Jalen McMillan. Let me just get that out there. But early in the season when I was charting Jalen McMillan, I thought he was like an actively just bad receiver. That was how he was playing. So I got to really dive into how much of this is, like you said, he's being schemed into looks because Liam Cohen's been really good at that all year.
Yeah.
You know, distract with run game, like play action and some of the motion with Mike Evans, things like that. Got to see what's up with that or if it's him just really improving. But I might need to at least tacitly apologize to Jalen McMillan, who, like I said, was an actively bad player at times this year, but has certainly been useful for the Bucs of late. He was tied with Mike Evans with 26 routes in this game.
Yeah, and again, this is 2 weeks in a row in which he catches a touchdown pass in which he's barely, he's not really even inconvenienced on his way to the end zone. So that makes me think it's either, you know, amazing play by him, which it might be, or it's, you know, this is really fun play design.
Next game up here, speaking of really fun, Jets 32, Jaguars 25 was pretty fun for, I mean, one of the most pointless games on the slate, like meant nothing except draft pick stuff for both of these teams. Although you can tell Rodgers is fired up for these games. Like the last few weeks, he is throwing the football around, which is great for fantasy because there are a lot of dudes we still count on from this team. So another really nice passing performance from him. Devontae Adams obviously goes for almost 200 yards. Garrett Wilson gets into the end zone. Breece Hall gets into the end zone. So from a fantasy perspective, which is all that matters for this team other than pride and, you know, maybe screwing the team over with draft pick stuff if none of these guys are going to be back next year. Yeah, great, great performance from the Jets.
Yeah, one of the few things that was a real like hinge point decision that I did get right in fantasy this week was starting Aaron Rodgers in a couple of super flex leagues. And that was about the matchup against Jacksonville. That wasn't exactly a ringing endorsement of the season that Rodgers has had, but he was having a good time, which, you know, we haven't seen a lot of this year. Not a lot of happy Aaron Rodgers. So that was good to see Devontae Adams absolutely bringing it, especially late in this game. That was good. Both Adams and Garrett Wilson make a little bit of noise. Credit to Breece Hall for playing through this too, right? Like he's obviously dealing with a significant knee issue that caused him to miss a week. This is clearly a lost season for the Jets. Like they're already at 10 losses. So this isn't like it's probably over like it is with the Dolphins, with the Niners, whatever. It's emphatically over for the Jets. And we got Breece Hall playing it out, which is, again, very impressive.
Yeah, and Braylon Allen picked up an injury in this game. So Isaiah Davis, definitely someone that you want on your benches in case Hall does get to a shut it down point. You mentioned Adams was productive late in this game. You kind of undersold it there.
I did. From
Rich Samini, yeah, who's covered the Jets forever for ESPN, noted that Devontae Adams had 135 receiving yards in the final 4 minutes of regulation, which is the most by any player in a game this century, per ESPN research. I mean, Andy, I know you've been covering the game for a long time, but not a century, pal. So you still got a way to go before you get to that mark, but yeah, at least a couple of years here. But that is a pretty big
That's a crazy
from Devontae
number.
Adams late. He had 198 yards, 135 of it in the final four freaking minutes.
Crazy number. Allowing him to, like, I don't know, he ran away from people too on the final touchdown. That was impressive to see. You don't think of him as that guy, you know. I've never thought of him as that guy, but he streaked away from defenders. That was cool.
Yeah, and Devontae Adams, he's I think both him and Rodgers will be playing elsewhere next year if Rodgers is playing at mm-hmm. all. But you know, because Adams has an absurd cap hit that they're almost certainly going to have to cut off of the book. So he doesn't look washed to me. He didn't look washed to me on film earlier this year. He doesn't look washed to me right now. He looks like somebody that can help a contender next year. On the other side of it here, let's talk Jaguars, which, you know, Mac Jones, this is kind of what I was talking about with Mac Jones when we discussed it with Nate earlier this week. He's Mac Jones, you know, like he's not the worst quarterback in the league. He's gonna make some bad passes, but he can deliver the football to his number one receiver, which was authoritatively Brian Thomas in this game. Brian Thomas, his first 10 catch game in the NFL. That's great to see, obviously. And he continues, because you know everybody else is injured in this passing game, he continues to consolidate power. Another 30% target share game for Brian Thomas in this one.
Yeah, it's funny. He's been steadily throughout the year. He's been a top 20 fantasy receiver, and it hasn't been until very recently that they've actually treated him as, okay, you are absolutely the most dangerous weapon on the field for us, and we really need to feed you, and we don't just need to feed you for like a 6-minute stretch. We need to feed you for the entire game. So that was really good to say. He was dominant. He was absolutely dominant. They get very little out of the run game, but I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to sound too enthusiastic about Mac Jones, but I have been impressed at how competent this offense has looked for lengthy stretches, and how dialed in by the standards of the 2024 Jaguars they actually seem to be with Mac Jones at quarterback. It hasn't been all bad. Like he's mostly been a punchline for me over the last couple of years, but you know this is a pretty impressive effort again in a thoroughly lost season for the Jags.
He's a perfectly fine backup quarterback.
Yeah.
He's not a complete disaster. We're going to talk about some disastrous quarterbacks in the email section of this game, which we will get to right after our final game here in the section that we sort of care about, which is Bengals 37, Titans 27. Maybe I'm being a little bit generous putting this game in this section and we don't have to spend too much time on it because the Titans, my God, I mean, they scored 27 points. They benched Will Levis in this game. This is one where I don't think they can try to joke around about it or try to hide it as some sort of like, oh, his shoulder, this, that, and the other. Although he was like working his shoulder out at one point in this game. 3 picks on 12 pass attempts for Will Levis, and they were not good. They were pretty rough moments for him.
Another pick six, I think his fourth this year. There was a possibility that Jameis was going to give him a run for his money in terms of pick sixes on the season, but I don't know. Now they both might not be starting next week, so I don't know what to make of that. It might be over for both of them. Just a horrendous performance by him. And if this is it for Will Levis as a starter this season, I'm not saying it is, but if it is, what a ride it's been for defensive streaming. He's been like the, you know, for the most part, I know I've talked about this before, you really just want to chase the offenses that are likely to drop back 40, 45 times. Those give you the opportunities. But Will Levis has really been an exception to that. It doesn't matter what you think the game script is going to be. He has always found a way to, you know, 2-3 times a game. He does something that is so head scratching that, it often results in a sack and a turnover and, or, you know, the possibility of a touchdown. So he has just been a real gift to people who stream defenses. And it was right there for you this week. I mean, the Bengals were like $11 in our daily game. They were widely available, and it's a perfect example of how the defense doesn't even need to be good. If you think the game might be a shootout, and you think the quarterback is of this kind of quality, you should just pick up the defense.
100%. And yeah, of course, like there was a 4-week stretch. It was like, oh, Will Levis looking kind of interesting. And now it's looking like, all right, they'll be looking elsewhere for a quarterback in the offseason. Probably can't really entertain another run at this. Tajay Spears played a pretty big role in this game. 7 targets. He was the leading receiver. Mason Rudolph was more than happy to check it down to Tajay Spears. So that is at least something to note for the next round of the fantasy postseason with Tony Pollard dealing with injuries right now as well.
Yeah, we saw a couple plays from Spears in this one that were very reminiscent of like the best moments from his rookie year. And Tony Pollard is playing through the ankle thing. He exited for a little while in this game, but fought through it, to his credit. He's clearly not the same guy that he was early in the year, but he's clearly going to play through it as well. But Spears took on a somewhat larger role. This was, I think, a season high, both in terms of touches and catches for him, and just really looked electric on a couple of these. So he was fun. He's a guy you can definitely think about flexing.
I don't think we need to really say anything about the Bengals. Like, this is the Bengals, so
kind of just need them to keep winning and keep this offensive circus rolling.
That is all we have to say on that. All right, let's toss to a break. When we come back, we will talk through 5 games that could have been an email. And man, like I said, we got some real email games to talk through in this section right after this. All right, we're back. Andy, let's talk through the games that could have been an email. And like I said, we got some real email energy in this one here. We got Ravens 35, Giants 14. Rashad Bateman's the best receiver in the NFL. I heard it here first. But no, I mean, 5 touchdowns from Lamar Jackson, 2 of them to Rashad Bateman. That was fantastic. Zay Flowers and Derrick Henry, really notable absences from like fantasy glory or anything like that. But hey, the Ravens are the Ravens. They keep on rolling here.
Yeah, phenomenal performance by Lamar, almost flawless performance by Lamar. He was great. Very low degree of difficulty matchup, but he was fantastic. Andrews was great. Man, Bateman, again, when I mentioned earlier that it was a great day for some of your pet receivers, he was top of mind. Nico Collins was top of mind. That first touchdown, number one, sick. How does he get that wide open? And number two, how does he make those guys miss at the end of it? Like that was a crazy play. He's good. I mean, he's not a guy who's going to get 12 targets. No Raven is, but man, he was pretty electric.
Yeah, I mean, he's got all I wanted for him was to stay healthy all year, make some impact plays, and get like 700 to 800 yards receiving in this offense. And he's tracking to do that right now, which is, like I said, that's all that I wanted for Bateman. So awesome to see that. On the other side of it, I guess the biggest storyline from this game is that Malik Nabers now has caught passes from Daniel Jones, Tommy DeVito, Drew Locke, and Tim Boyle in his rookie season. I mean, that is some, like Allen Robinson, Terry McLaurin, and DJ Moore are even like, damn, dude, that's pretty rough.
Yeah, that is some. Yeah, that's some Brandon Marshall stuff. That's just a handful of great receivers who've had to deal with like a rogues gallery of quarterbacks like that, especially within the same season. I don't know what more you could have expected from Nabers, because he gave us an injury scare in this one too. And then to finish with 10 catches on 14 targets, he finds the end zone in a really ugly offense. You just can't reasonably ask for more.
No, you really can't. They're probably drafting a rookie very high next year, because I don't see how they win another game this season of the New York Giants.
Yeah.
So should get better for Nabers next year, although, look, no disrespect to your guy Caleb Williams to catch a stray here when the Bears aren't even playing. It is at least worth noting, I just mentioned DJ Moore, right? It's like, oh, well, he's finally going to get himself a real quarterback, and then he still has like a disappointing season, because rookie quarterbacks usually aren't very good. So we'll see what happens with Malik Nabers and this team next year. Speaking of not very good, Cardinals 30, Patriots 17. Look, honestly, this game finds itself into the email section, mostly because I would say the highlight of the game was Marvin Harrison Jr. continuing to not win a contested catch. My God, that has really been I highlighted this in his RP profile that this was like a minor weakness of his game in college, like attacking the football in tight coverage. Big L for me, not minor. It's like the biggest issue of his game right now. That's the highlight for me. The other highlight is Trey McBride still can't get a touchdown. And Kayshon Booty, my God, I mean, he like gifted an interception to the Cardinals in this game.
Yeah, literally handed an interception to the Cardinals in this one. The man, the Harrison point is such a good one, because there was, you know, there was a path for Kyler Murray to have a good fantasy day today, and whatever, they get to 30 points. They win going away. It's not a particularly competitive game, but he put the ball on Marvin Harrison in the end zone, and gave him a chance to, you know, it gets ripped away, but it, you know, that is a play that you would love to see Marvin Harrison, just somebody who looks like a physically dominant receiver, actually play like a physically dominant receiver and just win that ball. So that was a rough one. They run a little shovel pass to Trey McBride that has been generating touchdowns for the Chiefs to random tight ends for many years, and they can't get a score on it. Like, it's just, it's maybe just not going to happen for Trey McBride.
Yeah, McBride now has 89 catches, no touchdowns, which I believe is the most in NFL history. And you're right, that is, if it already wasn't painful enough, what's gone on with this Trey McBride season, putting it in that air of like, yeah, every Chiefs rando tight end catches a touchdown on that play, really twists the dagger, Andy Behrens, on that one. Next email game, Cowboys 30, Panthers 14. A little bit of a step back for Bryce Young, I guess, in this game. Yeah. Although, you know, as Nate noted this week, like, some of the results were maybe getting a little overstated, because there's just still some questions in this ecosystem, still some questions with Bryce as well. Cowboys defense really stepped up in this one, sacked him 6 times, forced him into a couple of mistakes as well. He threw 2 picks, turned the ball over twice. Not an ideal game, but I will just say this about Bryce. He still looks like a playable quarterback, even if he did make a lot of mistakes here.
Yeah, I don't think the point with Bryce Young has been, oh, this is an emerging star, or, yeah, you know, I think it has just been satisfying to see Bryce Young arrest the nosedive that he was in, right? Because again, early season this year, before the benching, he just truly looked lost. And it was reasonable to wonder if he could be a functional NFL quarterback. And I still think that he has decisively proved that he can be. Can he be a star? Can he be a guy that you start in fantasy? Is he a guy that we're playing in one quarterback leagues? No, emphatically no. He has not been. And he doesn't have the receiving core to be that guy. I don't know that he's going to ultimately be that guy, but he's been playable in real life, and I thought he'd had some really impressive moments over the past month or so. So, yeah, I wouldn't take any of that away. The Cowboys have some dudes on defense, and sometimes they're going to show up. This was, by the way, like not a monster fantasy game or anything like that, but 3 touchdowns from Cooper Rush. He connects with CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee looked good. Looked healthy. At least I didn't see every play of this game, but it, from what I saw, we didn't get the 2 or 3 moments where CeeDee Lamb looks like he's in excruciating pain. So maybe that's a good sign, right? Like that was all encouraging. And then, man, the matchup ahead for Cooper Rush, I think he gets Tampa next week. Yeah. He gets the Bucks next week. Again, Justin Herbert didn't do anything against the Bucks. The Bucks were super impressive today, but over the course of the season, that has been a really friendly matchup. So I don't know. We've got 8 touchdowns out of Cooper Rush over the last 4 weeks. 2 against the Bucks seems possible. So you're in a super flex league. Go ahead.
Yeah, CeeDee Lamb looked like the best player on the field for long stretches of this game. Mm-hmm. I will say Cooper Rush's touchdown to Jalen Brooks was a sick throw. Mm-hmm. He's one of Jalen Tolbert also. That was a nice play by Tolbert too. So still something in the Cowboys passing game. Rico Dowdle, producer Colin, of course, notes this in the chat, that he is now the first undrafted running back to run for over 100 yards in 3 straight games since Arian Foster. Look, I mean, Rico Dowdle has been very impressive during the stretch. I've also will applaud the Cowboys for being mature, way too late, but mature at this point, being like, let's just give Rico Dowdle every carry and see what happens. I know Zeke has 9 carries in this game. Who cares? He was not in the main flow of the offense. That's good. Like I said, too little too late. It is also worth noting, I mean, Rico has run into the absolute most cakewalk schedule the last 3 games for any running back. To get the Giants, the Bengals, and the Panthers, I mean, again, all you can do is play the teams that are on your schedule and knock it out of the park, which Rico's done. But yeah, 3 pretty cakewalk matchups in a row.
Yeah, I do like he's a producer Colin obviously will know he's an unrestricted free agent, right? Like they have to make a decision on Rico Dowdle.
They will. He should be back with the team. Maybe they can add like another running back too. That's great, but like they got to bring him back after the way they just approached the running back position with just complete negligence in this offseason. There's no way they can just be like, okay, see you, Rico, go sign with another team, and we'll figure it out later. They can't do that. I think they got to find a way to bring him back, and he should want to come back to this team as well. Last note for me, just because you mentioned pet receivers, Jalen Coker has 110 yards in this game, and I know he got it all on 183 yard kind of busted coverage. He also was second on the team in routes and first among the receivers in snaps too. That's a big moment for him. Played more than Xavier Leggett. Leggett was a little banged up in this game. David Moore came in for him, but still, I mean, Coker to come back and for Adam Thielen to he kind of remained the main slot receiver, played 71% in this slot, and Coker's about 46.5%. That's big for Coker for this team long term.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's been a little bit of a like a different receiver each week, right? Like we had the David Moore game, we've had a couple of Thielen games. Coker was really good, but it's a very impressive group of young supporting receivers, right? Like they're just waiting for like a big dog to show up.
Yeah, they still need a one in the offseason. I would imagine Thielen's not back on this team, and I do think that Coker's a big part of this team. So if you got him in Dynasty, I think that's a win for you. Okay, second to last game here. Chiefs 21, Browns 7. Didn't think this game would be this deep into the outline, but it was a pretty, I mean, for one, just typical Chiefs stuff. Great. Like there's just nothing. Yeah. It's a fantasy pod. There's nothing to really talk about from a fantasy perspective. Mahomes' injury obviously might be a concern. Part of me just thinks, yep, Mahomes is going to do all that late in the game. Carson Wentz, we see him in a game that wasn't really competitive, and he'll just take the field next week because that's just kind of what Mahomes does. It's been the story of his career. On the other side of it, I mean, for fantasy, it's a big deal that Jameis Winston might have played his way out of the starting job in Cleveland with three picks, and they were all pretty disgusting picks in this one.
Like horrendous decisions, and it was an important reminder that the floor for Jameis Winston is always plays so bad he loses his job, right? Yeah. Like is that is maybe what happened. And the disappointing thing, number one, he's just been a fun story, and he's, you know, it's a fun fantasy experience, a little bit of a party when Jameis is in the game, until it takes this turn, right? And it's all negative. They have a matchup ahead with Cincinnati. Like that was going to be a blast of a game. And it was a very strong candidate to be one of those games that finishes like 33-31 and Winston throws one touchdown pass to the Bengals and three touchdown passes to his own guys and finishes with 400 yards, right? Like and we may still get that. Like Kevin Stefanski may ultimately say, yeah, Jameis is going to be our quarterback next week. But he wouldn't say it immediately after the game, which is generally a pretty bad sign. Yeah. So if that is the end of the Winston era for the Browns, it was a fun ride while it lasted until it became a very unfun ride. Patrick Mahomes is obviously like his health is going to be the story of the week. He was another one of those guys who got hurt, got helped off the field, and then stood around on the sideline and didn't receive additional attention. So maybe it's just going to be fine. He got the ankle taped again. Maybe it's going to be okay. It's not the first time that we've seen him helped off the field this year. If you made me guess right now, does he play next week? I'd say, yeah, he probably does, because he has a history of playing through things that we think briefly might be multi-week injuries. So I feel okay about it. If there's a fantasy takeaway on the Chiefs side, it's that the backfield is a little bit more of a committee than I had imagined after last week, because it sure seemed like Isaiah Pacheco had taken back over. But in this one, it's a, you know, he splits the carries evenly with Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt was good in short yardage situations. So we may in fact have something more 50-50-ish than I had hoped for.
Yeah, not ideal. It's worth noting for the Browns quarterback situation, Dorian Thompson-Robinson was at one point made the backup quarterback over Jameis Winston before Deshaun Watson was lost for the season, which I think kind of tells you they want to see Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I don't. Personally, I don't, but I like Jameis Winston's a free agent after this year. There's no like lock that he's back with this team. So they might have to start DTR next year, which they can't possibly leave themselves in that situation, but there's also a chance that they just delude themselves into another year of Watson. This is the Browns we're talking about. And this does, like I said, this does matter down the stretch for fantasy, because David Njoku is not involved in this game. Cedric Tillman's not involved in this game. Those guys will probably be back at some point before the fantasy postseason ends. And Jerry Jeudy, yeah, he gets you 108 yards in this game. DTR completed 4 passes for 18 yards, so you can do the math on where most of those yards came from. So this is definitely something to watch over the course of the week. Final game here, Commanders 20, Saints 19. The Saints also, they could have won this game. They went for two with down 20-19, obviously, at the final second of the game. Also should have maybe not had a chance to do that, because I think the refs blew the clock late in this game. Like, this game should have been over, but regardless, Commanders, yo, you can't be letting this version of the Saints hang around in a game when they lost Alvin Kamara in this game. They're already starting Jake Haener, who they benched for Spencer Rattler in this game. And even like, this is where the Saints are at this point, that I'm about to say this sentence on a podcast in the year 2024. Even MVS was lost in this game as well due to injury.
Yeah, this is every receiver who caught a pass for the New Orleans Saints. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Alvin Kamara, who exited the game with injury, Foster Moreau, Dante Pettis, Juwan Johnson, Kevin Austin, Cedric Wilson, Kendre Miller. Like, they are out of talent, especially with, it was a groin injury for Kamara. No idea about on his availability going forward, but you wouldn't think that you would push Alvin Kamara at this point in the season. So that's really rough. I thought Rattler looked fine on that late drive. In fact, he hit Juwan Johnson in both hands on the 2-point conversion, right? Like, that, I don't know, that could have been caught. I'm not going to say it should have been caught. I'm not going to call it a drop, but he did hit him in both hands, and it certainly could have been hauled in. So very close to Washington losing this game. Probably should have lost that game. Although, you're also right to point out that there were like 4 or 5 mystery seconds that sort of disappeared from the clock, which was, I read the little pool report from the officials after this one, trying to explain what happened. And it was the clock was inadvertently stopped. And then it's a non-reviewable situation, even though, you know, so many odd things are reviewable. I can never even guess at what's not going to be reviewable. Like, that actually seems like one where we could get that right on a quick review, you know, but they did not.
They did not. troubling for Washington from an NFL perspective. Look, I mean, we'll see what happens. I still would give the NFC East pretty good odds to go to the Philadelphia Eagles at this point. I still think they're one of the best teams in that particular conference. From a fantasy perspective, you got 21 carries from Brian Robinson. You got 2 touchdowns from Terry McLaurin. Shout out to him, who's just been dynamic this year. One of the best wide receiver picks you can make. And Jaden Daniels gives you a nice fantasy performance as well. So there's no real complaining there, but this is a concerning outing for the Washington Commanders as a football team. And on that note, Andy, that is going to do it. Hell of a week in the NFL, man.
Hell of a week. Hell of a week. I hope I have any fantasy teams that can make it to next week, but this was a hell of a week, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we'll see. We'll check in on me and how I'm feeling after this Sunday Night Football game, which you already know how I'm feeling, because I would have talked about it at the beginning of this podcast. Hey, it's been a long day. time is a little fleeting at this point. So on that note, that is going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, Dalton Del Don is back. He joins me for another edition of the Fantasy Bros Trust Meter. We put some of the most polarizing players in the league under the microscope. It's fantasy season, so listen, fantasy postseason, it's time to figure out who we can trust for the rest of the way. Until then, we are out.